This is the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show.
Line for Ekman Larson, right side Connor Garland, top of the circle, delays with a toe drag and a wrist shot blocked by Valimaki. Then he shoots again and scores. Here's a chance for the Canucks though. Gajewicz sends it back. What time did they score? Chase Waters through the middle.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Miller throws it to the goal. Chase saw nearly tipped it home in the crease. Puck is still loose. Blue painted. JT Miller scores. Flames couldn't get the puck away, and Miller skated in on the left wing.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Canucks win 4-2 over the Flames in Abbotsford, the first home game for the Canucks. This time in Abbotsford, and the Canucks are victorious. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And before we bring Corey Hirsch into the conversation, Oliver Ekman-Larsson just skated out as the first star of this game, getting a couple of apples to excite the crowd. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson, well, he's been the topic of conversation throughout the offseason since the Canucks made the big trade with the Arizona Coyotes. And considering Louis Erickson had a goal today, Oliver Ekman-Larsson had to step up to even the trade in the first day, and that's what happened.
I mean, I'm ready to give him the Norris Trophy, Sad. I mean, he was that good tonight. No, look, all kidding aside, it's preseason. We've kind of been open about our thoughts on what this means and that we shouldn't have any, you know, too sweeping of a take coming out of this. But absolutely, Oliver Ekman-Larsson looked very good tonight. So did Tucker Poolman. I also expect them to look really good against the competition that they had tonight in the Calgary Flames team that was, what do we count, 2-3 of their NHL regulars are on this roster tonight. But everything I saw from Oliver Ekman-Larsson was positive tonight, and that's what you want to see early in preseason.
Just like this person texted in, he looked so youthful, he might re-win the Calder again. let's welcome in Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Let's welcome in Corey Hirsch into the conversation. Hirschy back doing color alongside Brendan Bastard. Great call as always, Hirschy. And we'll start with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. What did you make of the game he had being named the first star here in Abbotsford tonight?
I've watched him play a lot, and that is exactly what you get. You doesn't matter that it was a bunch of young guys. It doesn't matter if it's Ovechkin. That is him. That is his game. Like, it's just, he's smart. He makes good plays. And again, if he's re-energized, this guy is going to really be a difference maker on the Canucks. He can munch a lot of minutes, too. So you lose Edler, you get a younger version of that, and a better player. No disrespect to Alex Edler, we love him here, and he was a great player, but, you know, OEL is he's elite, and, you know, this is a guy that has been a great player in the National Hockey League, so I'm excited to watch him more as we go along.
Yeah, he was really solid tonight, Hirschy. You know, he doesn't quite have the snapshot that you've got that I've seen a couple of times in alumni games.
Speaking of which, we're back in business, the alumni. We're skating. We had to take a year off last year. Injuries and COVID.
love to hear that. Okay, so the Corey Hirsch snipe show is back at Canucks alumni games. but, you know, his Oliver Ekman-Larsson was solid tonight. And I was even really impressed with Tucker Poolman. You know, I think this is a player that a lot of people may not have watched him too closely while he was with Winnipeg, but he's big, also moves really well for a pretty big guy.
He does. He played on the top pairing with Morrissey in Winnipeg. I watched him do that. And he does have some skills. I mean, his issue is that, he's got, when you're that big like him and Myers, you're not the most graceful. And when people are watching you, you're like, whoa, what's going to happen? You look like a 747. But he does have some skill and some playmaking ability. He scored a couple goals against the Canucks, if I don't recall, last year. He's going to be a good addition. I wouldn't be surprised to see him with Quinn Hughes at times. Just because, you know, you need somebody big and strong on that side with Quinn Hughes. And Hamonic was great, but I didn't feel he was big enough and strong enough to make up for when Quinn got pushed around. And then it was too easy for other teams.
And, you know, obviously Quinn's not at training camp, and that's still going to be something to kind of keep an eye on. If he does get signed here before the end of the preseason so he can get acclimated before the regular season begins. But on the back end, we'll kind of continue the conversation on this, and we talked about Oliver Ekman-Larsson a little bit. Looked good with Tucker Pullman, at least in the game tonight. But the guy's really stolen the show on the back end on back-to-back nights, and we saw him have a fantastic game in Spokane last night against the Kraken where he got a goal. Jack Rathbone, and it wasn't even so much about him scoring tonight and being that active offensively, although great transition plays, jumped into the rush, and you see his skating ability really flash. But defensively, Hershey, I was really impressed by how he played tonight and how hard he battled. And I thought him and Tyler Myers looked pretty comfortable together.
They did. They really did. I'm a big fan of Rathbone. He's got a little bit of a dynamic edge. He can skate. He can shoot. And you know what? He looks like he could be a regular NHL player right now. And we thought that at the end of the year last year. The thing about Jo-Levy is that Jo-Levy's not that dynamic player. And it's unfortunate where he went in the draft. But he doesn't. He's not the. You saw him at the end against the Canucks or against Calgary's 6-on-5. And he was out there for quite a long time, and he's battling, and he's blocking shots. And that's his game. We are not going to see a lot of flash and dash from a Jo-Levy. So, you know, Rathbone looks better to the trained eye in that situation, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Jo-Levy, you know, if he's going to be a guy that's going to be a third pair defenseman that you want to throw up for the penalty kill, is that, you know, they're just two different players. So it'll be an interesting scenario, but if you're going to lose Jo-Levy, you have to move him before you lose him for nothing on waivers, if that's a possibility. Because somebody will pick him up and give him an opportunity, I guarantee it.
It just feels... It's not even a knock so much on Jo-Levy, but it just feels like Jack Rathbone has set the bar really high for that third pair left side, right?
Well, eventually, Jack Rathbone isn't a third pair defenseman long term.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's a top four. So Jo-Levy probably is a third pair defenseman in his career. So, I would think that you're looking at Rathbone before you're looking at Jo-Levy, but... you know what? Defensemen get hurt all the time. That's the place where you need the most depth. You look at teams in the playoffs, well, what do? They grab more defensemen at the trade deadline if they're making a run. So you need
Do you think Travis tries to at least see if one of them can play on the right side and how it would look, how they would be able to handle it?
Yeah. You know, they might. I mean, think of who they have on the right side, hey? It's Myers, it's Pullman, and your third pair is going to be like Luke Shen. Who else do they have on that right side that can play?
It would be Hamonic, but...
It would be Hamonic, So
Kyle Burrows is a right shot D. Brad Hunt... Played a little bit of the right side while he was in Minnesota.
I don't think so. I think most coaches like guys with their sticks to the inside. And it's hard to play. You have to be a pretty smart, skilled defenseman to play your offside. Not a lot of guys can do it effectively. So what you could do is you might end up looking to move someone like Jo-Levy for another team that has a young guy that's a right side, right shot, right defenseman that needs to get a lefty, right? That's how you make deals. Everyone thinks, oh yeah, let's snow somebody. That doesn't happen. Rarely does it happen. Usually you're trading player for player that, you know, isn't working out in one organization to another, right? So but you know what, Jo-Levy ends up being a seventh D, and that might happen too. So you know, that right side is going to be a bit of something that they're going to have to fix. But you know, Jo-Levy can't play that side. Rathbone can't play that side. They're not old enough, and the only guy I could, that I could see playing that side might be OEL. That's good enough and skilled enough, right, to be able to do that. But why would you do that to him? So it's going to be interesting.
Well, and I think it is going to be interesting to see what happens with him on the back end, and also, you know, how healthy the roster remains as we get through the rest of the preseason, because we've already seen a couple of guys go down, right? So we'll see ultimately what happens on the back end. This is the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Kintec, Footwear, and Orthotics. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Before we get to some more listener reaction and the phone boards here, Hershey, I did want to ask you about Connor Garland a little bit. We did talk about him on the pregame show. You mentioned you're excited to watch him play. He got a goal in the first period, showed some decent chemistry there with JT Miller. And as the game goes on, you know what happens with these veterans. You've been around here too. Their interest kind of wanes a bit. You kind of go away from really pushing hard to let's just get through the rest of this game. But that flash we saw from Connor Garland in the first period was pretty exciting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And then once he scored his goal, he just kind of settled into playing a defensive role. And that's fine, too. He's not a type of guy that we're going to see get scoring chance after scoring chance after scoring chance. He's the type of guy that you're going to see sneak around, get in behind defensemen without them knowing. Using his speed on the back check, he'll catch a guy, pick his pocket. Little things like that are what he's going to do. And then he'll get in the right position for a chance to score. But he's not a guy that's going to get 10 scoring chances at the end of the night. He's going to have one or two, and he's going to bury one. And he's going to do the things around the ice, like picking guys' pockets and just being sneaky. And that's where he's going to be really effective. And, yeah, this is the second preseason game. I mean, who knows where his energy levels were at for the second and third period, right? They're going to be different once the season starts, too.
Corey Hirsch joining us on the Canucks post-game show. Have to ask about Vasily Podkolzin. He's pretty strong for a young guy, Hirsch. You could see him throwing his weight around a little bit. And also a really smart player for a guy that's so young.
Yeah, I liked him in the first. I liked him early. He had some really good scoring chances. And then from there, he just kind of tapered off. But that's young guys. That's what you expect, especially in their first game, because they are so jacked up in the first period. And if you guys have ever, and you, I'm sure you have, when you go 100 miles an hour in the first period, you don't have much left for the second and third, right? It's like, so you have to pace yourself. But when you're at that, when you're a young guy jumping into the NHL and it's your first, you want to do everything in the first period, right? You're going to just go out, but then you get a little bit more gas. You got no legs for the second and third period. So you have to kind of just pace yourself over the course of three periods. That's what veteran players do. So that'll change for him. But I loved him in the first period.
A lot of reaction on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And this one says, Hershey is the nicest guy in all of sports. Love it. So you're getting some love in the text inbox.
Thanks,
Hershey.
Buddy. Yeah, you know
there
what?
There you go.
There's a $20 bill coming for you, Mom. Thanks for texting in.
Moms are the best. They really are. Hershey, I did want to also ask you about Mike DiPietro a little bit. I mean, the thing I love about Mikey is his battle level, the athleticism. And we saw in that third period him laying all out and then just never giving up to make saves. It's a lot of fun just watching him play. But what did you kind of make of his progression and what he looked like tonight between the pipes?
That's him, right? That was a typical. That's what you're going to see. That's what you're going to get out of him. You know, no goalies give up on a puck. I mean, come on, right? We always say that. You know, they battle, they don't give up on a puck. But it's not that. It's the ability to be able to cover the ice or the space that you need to when there is a scramble. And smart about it. Knowing that players can't get the puck up from that tight, you really have to get down low on the ice, cover everything so that nothing goes through you. You know, if you have to throw a stick or whatever, or a body or an arm, and be willing what you need to do to be able to stop the puck, but also making sure that it's in the right spot. And that's where I love his game. His size is still a concern to me, but hey, you know what? Give him a chance, right? Like, let's see. Let's see what he can do. He's dominated in the minors. He's been pretty good. So another year down there, and then who knows? Maybe what happens with guys like him is that somebody gets hurt. And then he gets an opportunity, and then that's how they kind of make it in the NHL. So hopefully, you know, he'll get a chance.
Yeah, and you know what? Artur Silovs last night also looked good and got praise from head coach Travis Green. So, you know, looking at the goalie strength of this organization, in theory, you have Demko, you have Halak, you have Ian Clark running things. Curtis Sanford, who works well with him as well, he'll be really running point for the goalies in Abbotsford. But with Silovs and DiPietro, how good should the organization feel about the depth and just the overall structure of the goaltending position?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's, you know, with those guys having some experience, you always need guys with experience, right? Because you never know what's going to happen. They'll probably, you know, I could see them maybe signing one more guy, but I guess we'll wait and see how that all pans out. You typically need five guys. So you know, I guess we'll wait and see how what the plan is, and it won't just stay like this. You want Mikey DiPietro to get a lot of ice time. You want C-Lobs to get a lot of ice time. So, do they split? What do they do, right? At least they're in Abbotsford. So now you can call a guy up to the Canucks if you need a practice goalie too, right? So, on an emergency. So that helps too. Like, having the team in Abbotsford is going to be so much better for the Canucks.
Well, having some options, it makes life a lot easier. We talked to Trent Call about that, too, on the pregame show. Hershey, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll let you get off and get home in a decent time. We'll probably get home around 3 a.m., but you can get home now.
I'm leaving. Well, I spent the 3 hours on the road trip out here in the traffic and rain. You know, that was, you know. People should feel sorry for me.
I had to ride over with Dan Riccio, and he was pronouncing every sign in Italian.
Oh, my
God. He's like, Furlangli. I'm like, that's not what you say.
Lord, hey. You know what?
Hey, we took the 91, you know, across.
Let's go back to him in Swedish, Sat.
Before the we avoided the Portman.
The Portman. Yeah, well, you know what? I had to drive the pink Kiss truck here, okay? So.
Oh, beautiful.
You don't think anybody didn't notice me?
Yeah.
The redhead and the pink Kiss truck. Yeah. Tell me I didn't clash.
I think you were pretty inconspicuous myself.
I probably really was. I had my Canucks mask on, my jersey, name it. Yeah. All good, gents. I got to go.
Fantastic. All right. Get home safe. That is Corey Hirsch, color analyst for the Vancouver Canucks alongside Brendan Batchelor here on Sportsnet 650. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Jeff Rowe, OEL's performance was encouraging. His skating looks effortless, plus he's a big body defenseman, something Benning mentioned he wanted to acquire at the start of the offseason. That is Jeff Rowe texting in.
Sometimes I wonder, like, even what I expected out of Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but, okay, you think about a player that is in a market you don't watch very often, on a team that has been driving about the same level of entertainment that you would get out of watching the movie The Artist.
The Artist?
Yeah, like worst best picture winner of all time in Oscars history. Just personal opinion. But that's kind of what the Arizona Cardinals, Coyotes have been. It's just like about as boring as watching paint dry the last couple of years. So who's really watching their games and analyzing Oliver Ekman-Larsson that closely? You hear, you read, oh, that guy's got one of the worst contracts in the league. Seeing him here tonight, okay, it's not a for sure, but I've been pretty positive with everything that I've seen out of him through training camp and now through this first game. I expect he's going to bring a top four level ability to the Canucks defense. I know not everybody is going to agree with me on that, but that's how I feel about it. And nothing, I don't expect anything that we see here in the preseason to change my mind on that. And certainly not a bag skate is going to change my mind on that either. So, yeah. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is smooth. He's really good, smart. That's what you get when you acquire a defenseman that has previously been given Norris votes. So I'm just not sure what people had expected from Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Did they just expect, like, another Eric Gudbranson? Like, what did they think the Canucks were getting when they traded for Oliver Ekman-Larsson?
Yeah, and I remember I had a pretty good, I don't know if it was good, but I had a pretty lively rant about that a couple months back when it was, you know, I'm like, people are going to watch Oliver Ekman-Larsson and they'd be like, this guy can skate and chew gum at the same time. He can actually pass the puck. Like, he's not Eric Gudbranson making $7 million. It's like, no, the guy can play. The guy's talented. The question is, defensively and in transition, has he lost a step? Is he going to be able to find his game again? But as far as quality goes, there's way more quality to Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I think most people will give him credit for. The question was, can he actually get that done? But before we get to more of your thoughts and also we break this down, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Here is head coach Travis Green after a 4-2 Canucks victory over the Calgary Flames in Abbotsford.
I thought it was a good hockey game all the way around. Had a real strong first period. I thought offensively we got a little loose. When I say that, I thought we defended well in the second, but I thought we weren't as direct in the second period. We had some shots from the outside with no one at the net, and I thought we got back to it in the third. Yeah, it was good. Power play was good tonight. You know, I say that when you give up three power play goals, you're not going to be happy. But we had some young guys, a different looking team than we did tonight. Thought the penalty kill did a pretty good job. Obviously, they get a 5-on-3 goal, and Highmore was good tonight. I thought we had a lot of good players tonight. He was fine. Did some good things. You can see he's good down below the top of the circles. Made some smart plays, subtle smart plays. He was good. Fine.
What did you appreciate most about Nick Larson?
Yeah, he came out and, when you watch a new player, you're always, you can see him in practice till you see him in the game. I really thought he took charge tonight. Played with a lot of energy. Had a lot of bite in his game too, which you always like. He was good. Yeah.
Obviously, DiPietro hasn't had a lot of game action over the last year and a half, 2 years. What do you think about how he played?
Yeah, I thought he stood tall, especially in the 6-on-5. They probably had, 7 or 8 shots in the last 3 minutes there with the goalie out, and thought he looked solid tonight. I think so. I thought he was better tonight.
What did you make of the Gadgetters line, especially Gadgetters? You seem to have some video tonight.
I liked Gadgetters game tonight. I thought he played direct, made a nice play on the goal. You can tell he's worked on his skating. Yeah, he's had a good camp. You know, I didn't know a lot about him, but I think he's gradually got better. And when you see a guy get rewarded with a goal, it's always a special night for someone, even if it's exhibition. So it was nice to see. As advertised, I guess. Pretty solid player, all over the rink, big body. Both power play goals. You know, you could see he was around the net with a net presence. He understands the power play. I thought that line was good tonight. I thought he played well, too.
That is Canucks head coach Travis Green after a 4-2 Canucks victory over the Calgary Flames here in Abbotsford. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. Seth Yershaw with Dan Ricciu on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. So head coach Travis Green talked about a lot of good players tonight for the Canucks, and he liked kind of the effort the team had. Talked about the second period. They got away from it a little bit. But he did kind of single out a couple guys we talked about a little bit. And one guy in particular at the end, Alex Chiasson, who's here on a PTO. Big body, helped out on the power play. And I know some fans have been asking, is there a pathway for him to make this team? He's on a PTO, but I do think he has a chance of breaking camp with this squad.
There's a lot of forwards that are vying for those last few spots, but what has kind of become the theme for this roster right now? Okay, what do I need from you, and can you give me this? So, yeah, DiGiuseppe, Matthew Highmore, even Will Lockwood to a certain extent. I know they can give me an energy type winger on the fourth line, can put them on the penalty kill maybe. That's what I need out of that guy. But if I have somebody a little bit different, like an Alex Chiasson, maybe I can put him on the power play a little bit. If we do have a top six injury, I can fit him onto a line. We've seen him play with good players like Connor McDavid in Edmonton and have some success. So I think having versatility is something when you're Travis Green and you're making these decisions with Jim Benning, that becomes a big part of the conversation. And it's one thing that Chiasson maybe does more than some of the younger guys that are fighting for spots at the bottom of the roster as well.
A lot of reaction on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one unsigned. I don't feel like the question with OEL is whether or not he can play. It's whether or not he can still, and for how long, live up to for his cap hit. And that's true. And what we're talking about was the overreaction necessarily, but just a reaction to OEL that he was trash. I mean, people said that he's worse than Alex Edler. People thought that, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson is going to come to Vancouver and he's going to be playing at a replacement level. Yeah. As a defenseman making $7 million, because that's what they say analytically he was with Arizona the past couple of years. And some of the analytics, they're not wrong. They're true about how his season went, but it doesn't mean he can't bounce back from it. But the texter is right. The question more than anything is, how much of that cap hit and how many years can he live up to it? And he's 30 years old. He's got 6 years remaining on that deal. For now, all you can think about is what can he do in the immediate future. We'll see what it looks like in a few years. But can he provide high-level top 4 minutes for you this year? And whether he can or not, they need him to do that.
It's so much a part of the conversation when we talk about NHL players, their contracts. You know, and it makes you – I hate it because it makes you potentially not like a player that – you would otherwise really like, you know, as soon as a contract is signed, we're immediately debating, oh, this guy not going to be able to live up to that contract. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to do this, or that guy's not worth $10 million, or that guy's not worth $6 million or $4 million. And everything becomes about the contract. Sometimes for an NHL team, and this might be mind blowing for some to hear this. Sometimes for an NHL team, what can you give me in the here and now matters a ton.
Yeah.
And carries a lot of weight in the conversation. Is Oliver Ekman-Larsson, with his cap hit for the upcoming season, going to be better than what you got out of Louis Erickson, Jay Beagle, and Antoine Roussel? And the answer, I don't see anybody potentially debating me otherwise, is absolutely yes, with a bullet. I know Louis started off his Arizona career well.
I say be careful, you know. And Dylan Gunter also got a goal.
That's true, but that to me is the conversation for this year. Of course, I have concerns looking at the contract down the line, but for this year, I think OEL for sure makes the Canucks a better team in the here and now when you think of it in that lens.
Yeah, and we're going to need him to do so beyond the 1 year, but for the immediate future, for this year, how much can he improve the blue line? Only one preseason game, but Oliver Ekman-Larsson looked comfortable playing alongside Tucker Pullman tonight in a 4-2 victory over the Calgary Flames here in Abbotsford. A couple texts I want to get to before we go to break and come back. This one, Josh Emission, still preseason, but if this is the real OEL, what a heist by Jet Black Jim.
What a heist. Yes. Maybe they'll make movies about this heist that Jet Black Jim has pulled off.
Who knows? And this one, OEL is a top two D-man. What you forget about is how physical he can also be, and he's going to bring stability to the back end. And
he was mixing it up tonight, man. Like, he got into a couple of big collisions.
It's kind of like Edler in that sense, right? Yeah. Like, both those guys, I mean, Edler is kind of unassuming, but he'll crunch guys. And the same thing with OEL.
100%. He totally got physical in some moments. And, you know, I thought the penalty kill, when it was 5-on-4, the Canucks looked pretty solid in those moments. And OEL was a big part of that alongside Tucker Pullman.
Blue line bar down. Ylevi looked lost in the plays, low event, and looked like a total bust. Podkolzin looked great, but Green pretty much benched him. Not sure what that's about. DiPietro was the game's MVP. That is blue line bar down, spitting some fire to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. Get your thoughts in, 650-650 to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. Phone boards are also open, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. Your questions, your comments, and our analysis of this preseason game. Plus, you'll hear from Canucks players. As the Canucks Central Postgame Show continues, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, more of the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Postgame Show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now to the line for Ekman. Hedman Larson. Right side, Connor Garland. Top of the circle, delays. With a toe drag and a wrist shot blocked by Valimaki. Then he shoots again and scores!
Connor Garland opened up the scoring for the Vancouver Canucks in the exhibition game in Abbotsford against the Calgary Flames. The Canucks go on to win 4-2 against the Flames. We'll play back some audio from Connor Garland, who scored his first goal as a Canuck, albeit in the preseason, and he met with the media postgame. We'll play those comments coming up in a few minutes. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And a lot of questions and comments have come in there, Dan, and a lot of questions and comments about Travis Hamonic, who, well, not at training camp, and I think it's pretty obvious why he's not at training camp yet, and the team hasn't convinced him yet to join. Jim Benning today gave some comments to Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, and essentially said something along the lines of, it's a private matter, people need to stop prying into this and leave him alone. Which, hey, I understand Jim's defending his players' privacy and doesn't want people talking about it, but the reason it's being talked about so much is he's not in camp. And Jim Benning, who was on our show on Wednesday, mentioned to us, Dan, that Hamonic would be on his way to Vancouver and he would be joining the team in training camp. And this was on last Wednesday, and that didn't happen. Yeah. And as of now, well, Hamonic has a decision to make by Friday. If he decides to opt out of the season, his entire cap hit comes off the books for this year. The Canucks can then decide if they want to toll the contract to keep the remaining 2 years on the books, or just let the season go and then just have 1 year on the books remaining after this upcoming season, or whether Travis Hamonic decides to just simply retire. And if he retires, well, the money also comes off the books. So we'll see what happens here with Travis Hamonic, but he's got to have to make a decision here in the next few days.
It's not the best situation for the Vancouver Canucks right now to have this uncertainty with the season just a couple of weeks away and a player you committed $3 million for each of the next two seasons to.
Mm-hmm.
This is 100% unexpected. And I know Jim Benning is kind of sticking up for his guy and those sorts of things, and he's still trying to have these conversations and get Hamonic to a place where he can make his way to camp and to this preseason. But when you are speaking to the media and then following it up on our show, the People Show, last Wednesday, by saying he will be here and really having a strong thought that this player was going to feature in training camp and that this wouldn't be an issue. And now it's Monday, almost a full week later, and it still hasn't been resolved. Of course, there's going to be questions. And even the quote today, he's dealing with a personal issue, and I think everybody should just leave it alone. I don't know why people think that everything that's going on in the world, with everything that's going on in the world, that when we make a statement about a personal issue, people think they can stick their noses in it. Again, he did not get here on Thursday after it was said he would show up on Thursday. There hasn't been an update since. That's going to lead to speculation. Some of that speculation has been very well sourced mm-hmm. by different members of the media. So, I don't know. Why are you kind of angry about this? I know Jim doesn't always likes to say we don't have all the information, but in this case, it kind of feels like we have a lot of the information.
Yeah, and you know, I've mentioned my understanding of the situation extensively. I believe the Canucks are still trying to convince a player to get vaccinated, and the team doesn't want to carry a player on the roster if he's not vaccinated, and that player is not currently with the team. So you can piece it all together here. I think what Jim's trying to do, and I mentioned this numerous times as well, the team wants Travis Hamonic to be here. The yeah. team wants Travis Hamonic on this back end. They look at the right side, they look at this team, and they see a place for him on this team. So obviously they want to convince him to do everything possible to be safe and come and join this team. So I think what they're trying to do here is give him some time and try to back him up a little bit. Is it going to be successful? Well, we have a few days to find out. If not, well, the money comes off the books for this year, and we'll see what flexibility that gives the club, if any, when it comes to the contracts for Pettersson and Hughes. And I mentioned I'm not sure that changes things much. But even if you want to replace Hamonic on the back end, well, the free agent market is pretty thin at this point. You're looking at waivers when the roster cutdown comes down in a couple of weeks, or potentially trade if you're looking to replace Hamonic in a roster move.
Well, and as we've talked about all summer, what was the reason Tucker Poolman got 4 years at $2.5 million? There's just not a lot of right shot defensemen out there.
That's why Good Branson got a 1 year deal worth $2 million with the Calgary Flames.
100%. So the Canucks are not going to find somebody to replace Travis Hamonic at the 11th hour right now. That's just the reality of the situation. Can they piece it together? Sure. But it's not going to be something you fix right away. Maybe if you can maintain the flexibility on the salary cap, you can address it at some point in season if teams decide to become sellers, whatever that conversation is. Right now, you are not going to be able to fill the hole that Travis Hamonic is potentially leaving should he opt out, should he retire, whatever decision he comes to in the next little while.
Well, and we'll see ultimately what happens with him. Donovan and Powell River text into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox and says, Rathbone better be on the Canucks opening night roster, especially if Hamonic is out. He's been the most solid player this preseason. It's going to be really hard, whether Hamonic is out or not, to keep Rathbone off this roster. I think what Hamonic's absence, what that does is create opportunity for Olli Juolevi, Brad Hunt, somebody else on that D side, right? Whether that's a Kyle Burrows, whether that's Jet Wu, who played tonight and actually I thought looked okay playing alongside Olli Juolevi. But I think that's what we're talking about here. I think Rathbone, he's going to be on this team. I just don't see a way you can keep Rathbone off this squad. And I'm not just talking about preseason and training camp. It's what we saw at the end of last year and just seeing the continuation of it and stacking up against the rest of the blue liners. So if you have Hughes back and you have Rathbone under contract and Luke Shen's playing in your top six, well, that means you got two spots available for your 7-8 spots. Does Juolevi make it? Does Hunt make it? Do both those guys make it? That's what we're talking about here now for guys like Juolevi and Hunt. They're talking about 7-8. The top six, I think, looks pretty solidified right now.
It really does. And Rathbone, it's incredible watching him skate. And I said it to you during the game. I mean, I could watch this guy skate all day. He's that good. He's powerful stride, quick, and so smart. You know, just little things on the breakouts that you see Quinn Hughes do at times, the head bobs, you know, really faking a pass one way, going the other way, keeping the opposition kind of on their toes. Mm-hmm. You know, Jack Rathbone has these bits of deception in his game, and a lot of NHL defensemen do these types of things, but you know, it's at a different level with guys that have that innate ability, and Jack Rathbone has that. I just don't see a world where this guy isn't on the Canucks opening night roster. He's clearly set the bar pretty high for an Olli Juolevi or even a Brad Hunt to take that spot from him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. A lot of comments coming in on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. This one unsigned. So things have changed since Jim made that comment. And that's something I mentioned. I do think with the player in question, that there have been moments when it's like, okay, I'll do what's necessary, and then moments later it's like, I'm not quite sure I want to do this. And I thought it was interesting listening to Elliot Friedman on the 32 Thoughts podcast, and he talked about a situation on a team with one player who had even gone as far as make an appointment to get vaccinated, then last minute kind of changed his mind. Now their team is back trying to convince this player to get the vaccine. So when it comes to that type of situation around the league, what we've kind of found out is it's very fluid. Trying to convince some of those guys to get the shot hasn't been as easy. And sometimes the guys agree and then they decide not to. So that process hasn't been easy around the National Hockey League to get guys on board.
We had Frank Saravalli on today on the People Show, hour number two on the podcast. And we went through this discussion and how it's happening around the league. And it's different because, yes, of course, a player's talent level and a player's importance to his team comes and is a part of the conversation. So when the Columbus Blue Jackets have Zach Rinaldo as maybe their only unvaccinated player, it's very easy for the Columbus Blue Jackets just to be like, okay, we don't need you at our training camp, Zach. Other teams, like Detroit, with Tyler Bertuzzi, he's a big part of their roster. Okay, you won't play the games in Canada. We'll make it work otherwise. It's not ideal, but we'll make it work because you're one of our top six forwards. Mm-hmm. In Edmonton, it's an ongoing conversation with Josh Archibald. Like, we'd like to have you on the team, but just know that if you don't do this, you're not going to be on our roster. And that's just the reality of the situation. And especially for Canadian teams, just unrealistic to carry a guy who is not vaccinated. They would miss 40% of the season thereabouts. It's not a viable situation. So it's either opt out or we're going to have to find something that works, because clearly carrying you on the roster would not be able to work for us.
Yeah, and that's going to be the thing. We'll see ultimately what happens here with Travis Hamonic, who has to make a decision on the season by Friday. A lot more reaction coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Peter mentions that a couple of his favorite players, favorite prospects, appeared prominent in tonight's game. Listening to the radio, he says Lockwood and Gadjewicz, especially Gadjewicz, seems clear. Coach Green has pretty much decided on his opening night lineup already, and the bottom six spots don't include the young rookies. He has and once mentioned Lockwood throughout camp and scrimmage exhibition games. He mentioned he liked Gadjewicz tonight, but almost indifferent about it. That is Peter texting in. I'd say the Lockwood stuff, we've heard a lot of praise for Lockwood. I'd say that they are pretty high on Lockwood. And on Gadjewicz, I got to say, I liked how he played tonight. My questions with Gadjewicz, Dan, are going to remain the same. Mm-hmm. As the pace picks up, as the preseason goes on and we get to the end of it, and perhaps the regular season, is he going to be able to get to the spots he got to so effectively tonight? When the pace is higher, when the opposition is stronger, when they're tougher to break down, that's the challenge for Jonah Gadjewicz. But I did like what I saw from him tonight. I'm at the point now where I'm like, okay, I like what I saw. Now I'm intrigued to see what you can do when the pace picks up a little bit.
I see a player who's dedicated to get better, dedicated to doing the things that he needs to do to try and make a go of it at the highest level. But there's still a bit of a gap there. And for Gadjewicz, I think he dominated last year in Utica, but a big part of that was it wasn't necessarily a true AHL season, right? You had guys opting out, short season. It just wasn't what the normal talent level of the AHL would be. I think Gadjewicz probably starts the year in Abbotsford, and you go from there. It's not a slight to be the guy that is one of the first call-ups in case of an injury. Is Gadjewicz going to put himself on that radar? It feels like he's having a good enough camp that he is kind of taking over some guys that would have been in that conversation previously. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a lot, because I think the Canucks went out and built some depth because they weren't sure if a guy like Gadjewicz would be able to take that step. He has shown me a lot in this preseason and this training camp, and I'm excited to see where it goes. But the pace of the game is really his biggest issue, and tonight wasn't a true representation of the things that may still be the biggest speed bump for Jonah Gadjewicz to get over in order to be an NHL regular.
Right, and that's going to be the thing to watch for Jonah Gadjewicz. And we'll keep an eye on his development too, but a promising game from him got singled out by head coach Travis Green after a 4-2 victory over the Calgary Flames. A lot of thoughts kind of coming in here to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one, hey guys, Cody here again. What did you think of Podkolzin's first preseason game, and do you think Chiasson will make the cut? Let's start with Vasily Podkolzin.
I loved his game, Sat.
I know you did. I know you liked his game a lot. There's a real maturity to how he plays,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's maturity. It's smarts. You know, I just see a player that is going to help the Canucks a lot in areas that they really need it. Physicality. What's the word that coaches always like to use? Hard skill. That's what you see with Vasily Podkolzin. He's got the size. He's got enough speed. He's got the smarts to play at both ends of the rink. Again, there was a big shift in the first period where he just absolutely dominated it. Owned the puck in the offensive end. Won a puck down low. Carried it up to the high slot. Passes it off to the point man. Finds his way into the front of the net. Tips a puck just wide, almost scoring a goal. Like, it just had a little bit of everything. And that line of Podkolzin, Miller, and Garland, I don't know if it's a thing regularly during the season, but I could totally see it being a thing that Travis Green goes to if he needs some energy, feels like he needs a little bit more physicality. Those are things that the Canucks just didn't have the type of versatility to do last season. Now they do, having guys like Podkolzin and Connor Garland on this roster to generate a little bit more hard skill.
Well, and, you know, you're right. And I get, you know, people kind of roll their eyes sometimes when they talk about, when they hear coaches talk about hard skill and that sort of stuff. And, yeah, you know, I can roll my eyes, too, when we're talking about defensemen or players that really give you nothing. Just because you can throw a punch and you can take a hit or you can throw a hit doesn't mean anything if you can't move the puck, for instance.
Yes.
If you can't play defense, those things don't matter. Toughness and all that sort of stuff. If you can't do everything else you need to be successful at the National Hockey League level. But, man, you need guys to win these battles. You need guys to make sure that they protect the seal, to not let the puck go out. You got to make sure you get guys that win battles. And you got to make sure you have guys that know how to rotate when a defenseman pinches in or a forward gets overeager and goes down somewhere. You need guys that understand how to support their teammates and understand how to be successful in these battles. Because if you can win puck battles in today's National Hockey League, you're not going to have success, right?
Yeah.
So I get it. Sometimes it gets annoying as fans because you're like, let guys go out and be skilled. But it's like, there's a difference between being skilled and playing a meaningless game and then trying to have success in a hard-playing in a National Hockey League game, in a playoff game, where that intensity ratchets it up. You have to be able to combine winning in those dirty areas with skill, and I think that's the future of the league. The guys who are the best nowadays aren't just pure skill guys. It's guys that also are gritty at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, look at the guys we look at and praise around the National Hockey League nowadays. They have an edge to their game mostly.
You know, it's funny. We think about Sidney Crosby, and I know for a fact that Crosby hates when this is said about him, but the line of he's the greatest grinder of all time, which is kind of ridiculous because he's Sidney freaking Crosby, but I get the, like, the logic of kind of the description.
Yeah.
He wins every battle anywhere on the ice, especially down low in the offensive zone. There's so much to Crosby's game where it's like, you know, he's got the vision of Gretzky mixed with, you know, just an undying want to win the puck down low and do those grinder type things. And that's more of what the Canucks have needed. That's more of what a lot of teams would like. You know, that's just the reality of where the game is right now. And Podkolzin is a guy that's going to help the Canucks in those areas because, quite frankly, they've had a lot of young players over the last few years that have come through, you know who I'm thinking about, that haven't done those things. And despite everybody trying to get them to learn to do those things, if it's not within a player to go into those areas and do the things they have to do to be able to generate consistent offense and scoring chances for their team, they're not going to do it. But Podkolzin, you can see it's part of who he is as a player. And that is something that is going to have a very big impact on the Canucks this year.
Yeah, and to answer the other part of the question, I think Alex Chiasson has a chance to make this team. Head coach Travis Green did single him out. He does provide something. So there's something there to Alex Chiasson. the coaching staff may like, as well as management, but we'll see as the preseason goes on. We'll get back to more of your comments. If you want to grab a phone line, you can do so as well. 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. More of the Canucks Central post-game show coming up, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miller throws it to the goal. Chiasson nearly tipped it home in the crease. Puck is still loose. Blue painted. JT Miller scores. Flames couldn't get the puck away, and Miller skated in on the left wing.
JT Miller, game-winning goal for the Vancouver Canucks in the preseason as they win 4-2 over the Calgary Flames here at the Abbotsford Entertainment Center. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. A lot of reaction on a text inbox. Ryan and Shemanis, chase on, as in chase on. Play on words.
The chase is on. I guess that's what Ryan is getting at. Alex Chiasson. I don't know. If you're thinking of, if the decision comes down to like Alex Chiasson or Phil DiGiuseppe, I think I know where I'm going in that conversation. But Chiasson is showing well. I think there's just value in having a guy that you know exactly what you're going to get from.
You know what? At least he has a skill set that's a bit different than the other guys vying for spots on this team, right? Like, you go through the forward group and Highmore, DiGiuseppe, and Will Lockwood, very similar players, and they're speedy, physical guys that get on the forecheck and have, you know, obviously, you know, Peter texted in and said, you guys downplay Lockwood. No, I'm not downplaying Lockwood. I'm just saying what he's done effectively is getting on the forecheck. There's more potential to his game, but he's trying to carve out a role for himself and show he can do something in a fourth-line role, which has impressed the coaching staff and the team, and that's what we're focusing on, how he can get an inroad into this team. We'll see what his potential is down the road and if he can move up the lineup. But for now, his way to get into the lineup is playing on the fourth line and playing that type of depth-checking role. And if you start looking at the players that Canucks have, we just went through a few of them, how many guys do they have outside of Gadjevich, who hasn't yet proven he can play in the National Hockey League effectively? At least Chiasson. And listen, I don't like Chiasson all that much. I think he's a fine depth guy, but at least he can play the power play for you. He's a right-handed shot. He can score 10 to 15 goals with an opportunity, right? And having a guy as your 13 forward potentially that you can use in those positions is something this team is kind of missing right now as far as depth position players go.
So we've been getting a ton of questions about Gadjevich. And people want to see Gadjevich have success. And I get it. You know, he's a draft pick. He's had some success. He's a power forward. All those things. Is a potential, like, NHL comp for Gadjevich, Alex Chiasson? Big guy who can play power play, net front type of minutes.
Not the fastest guy.
Not the fastest guy, but, like,
it's interesting.
That kind of a player type, in a sense, where he can play and he can score goals in tight spaces, but yeah, he's got some flaws to his game, but you can see where he can have success.
I think that's an interesting comparison. And like Travis singled out Jonah tonight about how well he played, and that's who Chiasson has to beat out, right? He's on a PTO. If he's going to earn a contract with the team, he's got to show that he's a better option than guys like Jonah Gadjevich. And somebody asked us a question about who has to be exposed to waivers if they're sent down. Well, it's a very long list of players that would have to be exposed to waivers for the Canucks. Let's start on the back end. Luke Shen, Brad Hunt, Olio Levy, these are guys vying for a spot. Kyle Burrows, Brady Keeper is injured. Those guys all will have to be exposed to waivers. Jet Wu would not. He is waiver exempt. He'd get set down. Same thing with Jack Rathbone. I don't anticipate Jack Rathbone is going to be sent down, however. So on the back end, those are the guys that would require waivers. On the forward group, Matthew Highmore would require waivers. Phil DiGiuseppe would require waivers. Justin Dowling would require waivers. Jonah Gadjevich would require waivers. Zach McEwen would also require waivers. Same thing with Nick Petan, Justin Bailey, John Stevens, Sheldon Rempel, and Sheldon Dries. So pretty much most of the players the Canucks are looking to keep or send down would have to be exposed to waivers outside of Jet Wu, essentially, because all the other guys would have to be exposed one way or another.
So one listener is concerned that Jonah Gadjevich would get selected on waivers should the Canucks expose him. I'll say this. It's not a knock on Gadjevich's game. But think about what happens as the preseason ends. Every single team in the league is putting players like this on waivers.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many roster spots to go around, right? And also at the beginning of the season, teams tend to, like, how many guys get selected off of waivers there at the end of preseason? It's not a lot because teams are picking their internal options rather than looking outside of their organization. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the number it would be exactly off the top of my head, but I feel like every year it's not even a handful of guys that end up getting selected on waivers at the end of preseason.
Because most teams have the same issue, right? And there are a few guys that get picked up, but the reality is it's unlikely anybody picks up Jonah Gadjevich, right? Because he hasn't played at the NHL level yet, and teams looking to pick somebody up are probably looking at somebody more established or somebody that can provide a bit more potentially. I think the two guys that you would be most concerned about, or maybe three players, really. Phil DiGiuseppe, potentially, because, you know, he can provide that checking line role, and the teams wanted to sign him, and the Canucks got him signed. So perhaps he's a guy that might get plucked off waivers, but he's a winger. Usually wingers find a way to get through. On the back end, if they send Brad Hunt or Ole Joe Levy down, Corey Hirsch seems to think Ole Joe Levy would get claimed off waivers. I'm not so sure, but Brad Hunt might. Because he's a guy that for five straight years has played in the National Hockey League and made broken camp and has been seen as a legitimate depth option and can play on your roster for you. I'd still say it's unlikely anybody really gets plucked off waivers for the Canucks, but I'd say the two most likely would probably be Brad Hunt and perhaps Ole Joe Levy.
Yeah, and with Hunt, I mean, I keep thinking back to our interview with him in the summer when he signed. And, like, who doesn't want that guy on the Canucks, you know? When he's yelling, "Go Canucks, go," the happiest Maple Ridge boy around. I mean, Brad Hunt, 100%, is a guy I think makes the Canucks better as a team. We know injuries, you're going to have to dive into 9 or 10 defensemen at some point or other during the year. Bottom line, I know what I'm getting more out of Brad Hunt than I do Ole Joe Levy right now. And that might seem harsh to say, but there's still a lot of, like, when I watch Ole, I still want a lot more. You know, I expect more.
It's true because he was a fifth overall pick, right?
Yeah.
You expect more. But the reality is, what can he be?
Yeah.
And right now, he's trying to find a spot as a depth player on this team. And can he play the PK? And he's been on the PK, unlike Brad Hunt. Rathbone's played the PK a bit, but it's unlikely he's going to be a mainstay on the PK on this Canucks team. And Travis Green was complimentary of Ole Joe Levy's play today. So if he makes the team, it's going to be because of a defined role, and they want him on that depth position in one way or another. A lot of reaction on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Kevin and Abby, I was at the game, and I will say Tanner Pearson looked good tonight. Looked like he had an extra step. Sean and Victoria thought Lockwood made some nice plays in the third after some solid forechecking. You know, on Tanner Pearson, he's never going to be a speedster. He hasn't been.
Nope.
But for him to live up to the contract he signed, a 3-year deal worth $3.25 million, and he's, you know, getting close to being 30 years old now, he just can't lose a step. So I agree with the text for Kevin and Abby. He looked lively tonight, looked like he was moving well. I'm not sure he's gotten faster, but one thing he can't afford to do is get slower.
No, and like his goal tonight, that's exactly the type of goal I expect from a Tanner Pearson. Him and Bo are... it's a lock. You know, him and Bo are going to remain line mates, at least to start the season. How he is going to live up to his contract is to, can he be the guy that he was when he first got to Vancouver? Because if he's that guy, then he's easily living up to his contract. If he's what we saw last year, then that's going to be a tall ask. But this is just a player that I think the Canucks expect. We're going to get, you know, between, let's say, 16 and 22 goals a year from. He's going to play a little bit of PK for us on our second power play unit. That's worth a league average salary to us. Plus, he's good in the room. Part of our core group, in a sense, alongside Bo Horvat. That's what the Canucks valued when they gave him that contract. Not just, you know, the raw numbers and the analytics that go along with the Tanner Pearson.
Well, and, you know, a big driver in getting Tanner Pearson signed, because at the time, I didn't love the term, the $3.25 million in 3 years. You know, I was of the mind of save the money and try to figure something out in the offseason.
In a flat cap, it seemed like a lot when they signed it.
The reason the Canucks felt it was more important, and the reason that, well, Jim would say he had more information than we had when he made that decision, and, you know, I've been able to gather some of the information about that, talking to some people, and one of the things that became very clear, and we've gone over this from last season so many times, but we'll just, you know, we'll give you an abridged version here on the Canucks Central post-game show presented
like
by Kintic Footwear, and yeah, it's a bit of a shorter version. So, long story short, last year the Canucks failed to sign Markstrom, Tanev, Troy Stetcher, Tyler Toffoli, and we all know there was a lot of disappointment by the players on the team that they failed to bring a lot of those guys back. Now, we can sit here and say it was a good move not to bring Markstrom back and pay him 6x6, and same thing for Tanner Pearson. Toffoli one's a tough one that got away, but the reality is a lot of players were kind of dumbstruck by what had happened that offseason. There was some disappointment about what happened that offseason. We all know how the season unfolded, and then Travis Green's situation was uncertain. We weren't sure if the Canucks would spend money and bring other guys back. And the season really went off the rails. And then the whole COVID outbreak happened. And there was a sense that the team had to do something for the group. And Bo Horvat was also a player that was very vocal to the organization about Tanner Pearson's importance and them needing to keep him. And based on how last season went, based on Bo Horvat speaking out, and based on them having to show some ambition financially, I think they kind of got in a position of, we kind of have to take care of somebody now. We couldn't take care of the guys we wanted to last offseason for whatever the reason was.
Yeah.
We kind of feel like we have to do this for the group more than anything else, especially the captain that's going after this guy. So I think the Tanner Pearson one, in an academic world, it's easy for us to say, hey, just get rid of him and use the money elsewhere. I think the organization looks at it and says, if we let that guy go, we would have opened up a can of worms. We're not quite sure we could close again.
It's not every situation is so black and white.
Yeah.
You know, when the Canucks decided to re-up Erik Gudbranson a few years ago to the three-year deal at $4 million per, it was like, what is happening here? He couldn't stay healthy. The games he was playing, he wasn't showing all that well. You know, it felt like the Canucks were trying to hang on to a hope that he would make value on the deal, the trade that they made, and it just felt like too much. They end up flipping him for Tanner Pearson, and it works out, but this Tanner Pearson extension never felt, yeah, it felt expensive, but I just felt like there was a lot more context to it and why the club felt like they needed to keep this player around. I felt they did it for the wrong reasons with Gudbranson. I don't feel that with Tanner Pearson this time.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? Again, I had different thoughts on the player. That's the reason the Canucks decided to bring Tanner Pearson back. But the reality is they're going to need Tanner Pearson to be able to earn that money for the next 3 years. And at the very least, he's a capable middle six player for this team that has the potential to score over 20 goals in a season and provide more point scoring. Last year was a down year for him. So to go back to what the texter mentioned, he had a nice shot, a nice snipe. He scored in the third period there for the Canucks as they went up 4-2 on the Calgary Flames. But yeah, Tanner Pearson, that's also a guy to keep an eye on this year that the Canucks need a big year from.
And in the context of this roster, you know, he is not as relied upon as he has been over the last couple of seasons. You bring in Garland, you have Podkolzin in here now, Hoglander's really shown out. Now, like, you think about Pearson in this group, plus the addition of Hoglander and Podkolzin over the last little while, and Garland. Now the Canucks have the option of moving Miller to center and still feeling like they have enough winger depth to at least have a duo that they can work with each one of their centers if it were Pettersson, Horvat, and Miller. Whereas, you know, at times it was like, you know, last year you lose one winger and it's, oh my God, who else do we have here, you know? The Canucks have a lot more depth in those areas now, so it allows them the versatility. And one of those reasons is you have Pearson still around.
Yeah.
You may not love the contract, but the Canucks also figured we can afford this now because we're not yet paying guys like Hoglander and Podkolzin. Once those contracts are due to get paid, then we're going to have to figure something out. But by that time, at most, he'll have 1 year left on his deal.
Yeah, and that's kind of the position they're in. A lot more reaction on a Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Peter says, this whole camp is just that. Camp, no tryouts. The roster is already decided going in. The team is in win-now mode, and that usually doesn't include many rookies. I'm not sure that's necessarily true for the team this season, because here's the other reality. We're not sure when Brandon Sutter is going to join the team. He's out with fatigue, and we don't have an update on what that's going to entail, and when he's going to join the team, when he's going to play. Tyler Mott isn't ready to join the team yet either.
Yeah.
So that's two regulars who will most likely not be with this team when the regular season begins. Elias Pettersson most likely will be signed by that point. But there are spots available. There are spots available this year. And whether that's Will Lockwood, you know, whether that's Jonah Gadjevich, people talked about. But I do think up front, at least one rookie is likely to make this team. I think Lockwood has a chance to make this team. And on the back end, Jack Rathbone's a rookie. He's going to be making this team as well. So I think this team is going to have at least two rookies on the roster, not to mention Vasily Podkolzin, who's a rookie as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, there could be at least three rookies that break camp and have regular spots in this team this year.
I did not come into camp thinking Will Lockwood was going to be on the Canucks roster. Here we are, 10 days later, and I think he's got a decent chance of making the team. You know, who was that? We always had a question mark about who was going to be fourth line right wing. That was before you knew that Tyler Mott was going to be around. Brandon Sutter might not be ready for the start of the regular season. Elias Pettersson still not here. All those things. You know, look, Zach MacEwen is not a for sure on this roster. DiGiuseppe, Highmore, Lockwood, Chiasson, Gadjevich, all these guys are fighting for, two, maybe three spots out of the gate, depending on who's ready for night one of the season. That's not insignificant. That's more spots than most teams around the league have right now. The Canucks' top nine is pretty set, but the fourth line, it's pretty much an open game right now for the Canucks on the forward group.
Yeah, I think there's lots of opportunity there on that fourth line, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see a few rookies break camp with this team, because that's just the reality they find themselves in this year based on everything that's happened and everything that the organization has kind of gone through here. And you look at the team and what they need. There's a chance that there's opportunity here for a couple of guys to break camp and get through the team. We appreciate everybody and all your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And we always appreciate all the love and support for the people that we saw here at Abbotsford. And the Canucks postgame show is presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. Special thanks to our entire crew here in Abbotsford. Dan Riccio hosting the show alongside myself, Satyar Shah, Cam Berra, Roger Shergill, going back to the station, Art Factora, Josh Elliott Wolf, a cast of thousands getting this broadcast up, and you, the listener, and for all your submissions and listening to the show, we appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you again on the next broadcast. And the People Show, Dan, myself, Randy, 3 p.m. tomorrow on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.